Greetings, programs, and welcome to another episode of the Awesome Friday podcast, coming to you on a Sunday, because Awesome Friday, it's a state of mind, not a time and place. This week, we're speaking about two new films, last week's Free Guy, which is a 20th century release, and The Night House, starring Rebecca Hall, which is a Searchlight Pictures release, now in theaters. With me, as always, is Simon. Hello, Simon. Say hi.
Hello again. It's been so long.
It has. And I, of course, am Matt. We are coming to you for the second day in a row, technically, because we had some technical difficulties yesterday. So we're about to repeat a whole podcast. So that's fun.
But we're going to do our absolute best to make it seem like these are brand new thoughts. The power of acting.
Well, I mean, I'm going to try and think of it as like we had a rehearsal.
Okay. Like, because we always rehearse our podcasts.
Yeah. Because we're professional.
What's nice about this one is that you probably won't hear the absolute desperation in our voices as Zoom cuts out for the 50th time and the microphones screw up. So I think it will be a somewhat more relaxed podcast than yesterday.
Yeah. It's a whole thing. Let's not relive it. Because it was very frustrating. So we've actually both watched Free Guy, which is nice. And I have seen The Night House, which is also nice. And I think we're just going to dive right in to
Let's see Free Guy.
Free Guy first, because it's the senior release, if you will. And it's one of the biggest movies of the summer. So let's start talking.
Yeah, well, so, I've just seen it. In fact, when we tried to record yesterday, I walked out of it like 45 minutes earlier.
Yeah, so why don't you have it a little fresher in your mind? So why don't you give us the 30-second rundown?
So the pitch for Free Guy is Ryan Reynolds is Guy who works in a bank, and he wakes up every morning in a very similar way to Emmett from the Lego Movie. He wakes up with a big smile on his face and he says hi to his fish and he has his coffee and he goes to his job and everything's perfect. Everything is awesome. And he is happy with his life. And he has in his wardrobe are 20 identical blue shirts and pairs of pants, all with the name tag on, because that's his life. That's his lot in life. But what's odd for the viewer is that while he goes about his life in a normal way, around him, things are exploding. There's gun battles, there's tanks crushing cars, there's multiple bank robberies every day. And that's because it turns out he is an NPC, a non-player character, in a video game. And this video game is very much somewhere between Fortnite and Grand Theft Auto. It's a city where you go as a player to either commit crime or later stop crime. And so around him is all this stuff going off, people parachuting in and landing in cars and blowing up vehicles and missile launchers and all kinds of things. And he and his NPC buddies walk around doing the same thing every day because that's their job. They say the same things, they do the same actions, until there's a divergence, and we learn about this later. But there's a divergence in him, and he starts thinking outside of his pre-assigned AI loop. And this is triggered by a couple of things. But through his newly found identity, he tries different coffees and he tries different things. And he eventually gets drawn into this fight from an external player who's trying to prove something, get something in the game to prove something. And he levels up in many different ways. And the most surprising thing about this, in fact, there's two surprising things. The first is it's really, really good. So if you, like me, love video games and you've spent much of your life watching terrible video game movies, you're kind of conditioned to expecting movies about games to be terrible. This movie is wonderful. And the reason it's wonderful, number two, is that it has a ton of heart and it's really well directed and written and snappy. And it actually says some really nice, deep things. And it's kind of a cheer out loud, happy movie. And God damn it, we really need those at the moment. So that's my 3-minute take on Free Guy.
And that's both succinct and I would say accurate. Not to put too fine a point on it, but I feel that Free Guy is probably the best movie of the summer and definitely one of the best movies of the year, which is not something I expected to say about a film like Free Guy. Not that you know, any particular kind or style of film is bad. But generally speaking, you know, the big summer blockbusters aren't typically the things that I'm thinking about in a big way anymore, you know. But this is definitely one of those, and it's definitely it's just a straight up love letter to gaming, which I very much appreciate. You know, in I think one of its great strengths is that because it's not trying to adapt a video game, it allows it to just be, again, a love letter to gaming.
All video games.
Yeah. I mean, so the city that Guy lives in is called Free City, and that's the name of the game in the movie as well. And it's basically just a cross between Fortnite and GTA, which, to be fair, is a pretty broad swath of games at this point, either Fortnite or GTA or both. But just the way that the NPCs interact and the way the players enter the game and play the game is all kind of like, if you love video games, you're going to love this movie. And if you love just movies with a ton of heart, you're also going to love this movie. And I think a lot of that actually comes down to Ryan Reynolds, honestly. He's fantastic in this. I know we've talked a lot in the past as a society that, you know, Ryan Reynolds was kind of born to play Deadpool, which, to be fair, is probably true. But I think that this is actually the kind of role he's best at. I think if you take Deadpool and bring it down to a PG-13 in terms of at least his line delivery and the type of jokes that are told, then that's what this is. And while Deadpool is a very sincere franchise, it doesn't necessarily have the same level of heart and soul that this does. And I say that as a person who loves both Deadpool movies.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what I said to my son coming out of this is that, because he's desperate to watch Deadpool, and he's 10, so he can't watch Deadpool yet. And I said to him, this is as close as you're going to get to watching Deadpool. But what was really nice about this is that Wade in Deadpool, Wade's always kind of being sardonic and sarcastic, and there's not a lot of innocent moments, maybe in the second one more so. But in Free Guy, Ryan Reynolds plays the innocence a lot more straight. It's less kind of winking to camera. So when the winking to camera happens, it's entirely wonderful. And you mentioned that it's a movie made, if you love video games, you'll love this movie. And the great thing I think about the way this movie's been put together is that you could be the video game addict and walk into this movie. But similarly, you could have never played a video game or a modern video game in your life and walk into this movie. And you will both get something from it. And I think that's a really good balance, because it's not pandering and it's not precocious in any way. The references are there if you want to find them. But if you don't have the sort of the back knowledge of what's going on here, you can still completely understand it and understand what the hell's going on. And that's a real achievement, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth pointing out that I saw this with my wife, who is by no means a gamer. Like, she's a classic gamer, right? Like, we still have the SNES that we have is hers. So like, she's not a person who's played games, but she does not do modern shooters or modern third person adventure type games, and she liked this movie as much or more than I did.
Man, if they make, sorry to interrupt you, if they make a Free Guy 2 that's based on Farmville, your wife is going to wipe the floor with all of us.
That's probably true. Or Candy, or if they somehow managed to work Candy Crush into it. Or to be fair, Animal Crossing. She's played so much Animal Crossing, like an impressive amount of Animal Crossing. But anyway,
you know, I would watch a second movie where Ryan Reynolds is just living in his farm with his chosen partner, just tending to his farm.
Yeah, I would watch that too.
That's my pitch, Sony.
It is interesting that the movie does feel like a bit of a one-off. Like, the story actually wraps up. There's not a lot of sequel teasing. The end of it is delightful for a lot of reasons. But they are talking about a sequel already, which,
I'm
not surprised, but like, maybe a little disappointed. Like, I feel like sometimes we just need that the one-off story, you know? And we don't need everything to be sequelized to death. That being said, I don't want to judge anything before it happens, but you know, I would say too that if you know, just to be real about the movie for a moment, it is definitely like it's summer popcorn eating fun, right? Like it's not any deep examination of any of the themes that it could be a deep examination of. Most notably would be like the nature of artificial intelligence and how we treat artificial intelligence. And like there could be a much darker film about like an AI coming to life and realizing that people are bad because he's been tortured by in a video game this whole time. But it's not that.
That's basically Her, isn't it? Isn't that what happens in Her?
No, that's actually closer to, say, Ex Machina, really, would be the closer analogy. Her is a whole different thing. So it doesn't really go deep into, like, it definitely brings up the whole, like, this is the first artificial intelligence, maybe we should try to save it angle, but it doesn't take anywhere near the dive into that it could.
But
honestly, like, that's also not what this movie is, right? This is a summer fun movie, and it's a perfect version of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's well cast around the board, and it's just nonstop fun. You know,
talking of casting, there's a lot of nice little surprises, and none of which I'm going to ruin because it's much better if you just find them organically. But there's one tiny role where the casting agent had to cast someone who is basically the most perfect, handsome, stereotypical action gamer you could think of, but who is someone who actually turns out to be a massive dork. And when you go and watch this movie, it'll be very obvious who this person is because they're the first person we see, to be fair.
Yeah.
And that is a precise, perfect piece of casting. Made me very, very happy.
Yeah. And to be fair, even all around the casting is good. You know, Jodie Comer is, I think it's not really fair to call her an up-and-comer anymore. She's up-and-come. And okay. She's really good. And she has basically two parts to play in this film, especially at the beginning. You know, as the sort of facade drops a little bit through the movie, her, you know, real-life character, Millie, and her video game avatar, Molotov Girl, are sort of merged together a little more than they do at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But her and Joe Keery, who you'll remember from Stranger Things, and Lil Ray Howery, who plays Guy's best friend, the security guard at the bank, is excellent. They cast Taika Waititi as the sort of douche bro gamer asshole head of
so the, obnoxious oh yeah, my god
so obnoxious head of the game studio that makes the game, and he's so perfect in that role. And even it's sort of a thankless role, but Utkarsh Ambudkar, I believe is how you pronounce his name, plays the sort of Joe Keery's friend at work, who's another like a game developer, game customer service person, who ends up kind of like throwing in with Taika Waititi's character when it comes down to it. And he's always funny. Like, I don't know if you know, if you can picture this guy, but Utkarsh Ambudkar, he's really good in Pitch Perfect. He's really good in Brittany Runs a Marathon. He, like, everything he's ever been in, he's been at the very least interesting in. So he's one to watch as well.
Well, he's in Pitch Perfect.
Yeah, he's on the Troublemakers in Pitch Perfect.
Yeah, he was good. Everyone had good, really good timing, like line delivery timing in this movie, and I think there's a lot to be said for that in terms of making the way it made it all work.
And I think the thing that really makes it work is that all of the relationships have good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Like whether we're talking about, you know, Ryan Reynolds and Jodie Comer, excellent chemistry, or Ryan Reynolds and Lil Ray Howery, also great chemistry. In the perfect sort of like innocent children, best friends kind of way.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Keery and Utkarsh Ambudkar, great chemistry as sort of like frenemy co-workers. Jodie Comer, Joe Keery as, you know, former partners now at odds. Also, like every relationship feels real and human and like it has a backstory, but not in a way where you feel like you're missing anything by not seeing that backstory. It's really good.
And there's
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say there's a lot of action and it's all really well directed. It's all very, very specifically meant to resemble video games, but it really draws you in. The action's really, really good. And the in terms of action, there's a point in the last kind of third where this movie was went into production before Disney bought 20th Century Fox. And there's a moment that I'm not going to reveal that was only made possible because of the Disney acquisition. And let me tell you, the entire theater just lit up. It's really one of those movies where people do, like, as a gang, share how much we're enjoying this movie. And I love it when things like that happen.
Yeah, there's definitely some synergies there following the acquisition of Fox by Disney, for sure. And also, like, some delays. Like, this film has been a long time coming, and it feels like it would have been really easy for it to be a letdown just based on the, like, you know, first the delay from the Disney-Fox merger and then the delays from COVID. It feels like it could have been a real long road to a letdown, but it's really kind of refreshing that it's not.
I'm so surprised it's good. I have to tell you, I'm so surprised that a video game movie that's been in development hell for years and years and years through two different companies, and I imagine rewrites and reshoots and whatever, turned out to be this tight and this funny and with good pacing and an excellent resolution. Like, I am genuinely surprised how good this movie turned out.
Well, the interesting thing, though, is that Sean Levy, the director, actually has a fairly consistent filmography, really. Like, he has a couple of things in his early filmography that aren't great. And he has at least one comedy that's a little more recently that isn't that great. And he did The Internship, which, if you haven't heard of it, don't worry, it's not very good. But he also did the Cheaper by the Dozen remake. He did the first two Night of the Museums. He did Date Night. He did one of my favorite popcorn movies, Real Steel. He has a fairly good filmography when it comes to this kind of movie, which is to say the sort of summer family fun with a ton of heart and a really well-crafted emotional finale. You know, so definitely it's not that surprising to me that a movie he made is good, but it's refreshing that a movie based on even the concept of video games is as good as it is.
Yeah, I didn't realize he did Night at the Museum. That makes a lot of sense. Those are really solid movies. I really like those.
Yeah, all three of them, actually, which is... And honestly, I'm going to say this. We talked about this at length at my insistence yesterday on the recording that didn't work, but Real Steel is one of the best movies of the 2010s. It's such a perfect summer family action movie. And much like Free Guy, which uses video games as a frame to tell a story, it uses boxing, like sports. And sports are the best frame for movie storytelling. So, but much in the way that this movie is basically a cross between, like, Grand Theft Auto and this is basically the Grand Theft Auto plus Fortnite plus Ready Player One plus The Matrix and I guess a dash of The Truman Show. Right?
Like Call of Duty, the most recent Call of Duty as well, definitely, with the guns.
Yeah. Whereas, like, Real Steel is basically Rocky plus family road trip movie plus Rock'em Sock'em Robots. You know, like, so there's some precedence for him, you know, genre bending a little bit and having things turn out really well.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. Go and see Free Guy. Of course, your mileage may vary when it comes to actually setting foot into a movie theater, especially at the moment. It is a film that will benefit from the biggest screen you can watch it on and the loudest set of speakers you can watch it through. But that's completely your call. But it's very much a nice experience on a big screen, whereas lots of films recently I've been fine watching at home, but this felt like a good movie experience.
Yeah, it's definitely worth investigating your circumstances. I think that this film would definitely benefit from the big screen experience, but if you're in a place where COVID is still a thing, it will definitely be on demand by the end of the year. Like, don't don't feel like you need to risk yourself or anyone else to see it. It is at the end of the day, just a movie. So safety first is what I'm trying to say. But if you can't see it, I would go see it because it is great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. What's our next film?
So let's talk about The Night House, which is an interesting film for a couple of reasons, starring Rebecca Hall, and it is a Searchlight Pictures, which makes it another artifact of the Disney Fox acquisition. Mm-hmm. Although unlike Free Guy, which was promoted to the ends of the earth for 2 years, The Night House feels like it was kind of just dumped into theaters,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is an interesting thing. There's a lot of sort of Fox properties that either got canceled or were in production and Disney decided they liked, or were in production and Disney decided they couldn't just abandon. And this feels kind of like that third category.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a horror movie, which, you know, Disney's not, you know, historically, at least recently, historically that on board with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're much more about big, broad family fun, and this is not that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all a real shame because it's actually a pretty good movie.
what's the synopsis of this film?
So The Night House stars Rebecca Hall, who you will remember most recently from Godzilla vs. Kong, but who has had a long filmography now of excellent performances. And she plays a recent widow. And she remains living in the house she lived in with her husband. Her husband has killed himself, we learn very early in the film. And she, in her grief, begins to spiral a little bit. She's trying to push through the grief, but she's self-medicating with brandy and booze, and weird stuff starts to happen within the house. This is basically a haunted house story. Now, I don't want to talk too much about what exactly is going on, but I will say that while at no point what's happening on screen, do I ever doubt what's happening on screen is actually happening to her, but the film does a really good job of showing her drinking in such a way that it's totally realistic that everyone around her doesn't necessarily believe it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do
we know as a viewer, which side are we on? Like, are we sure that she... sure of her mental state?
We're with her the whole way. The film would like you to have doubts. And I think mm-hmm. in that regard, like at no point did I have doubts as to what was happening was real.
Oh, okay.
So I think that while the film would like it to be that way, I don't think it's entirely successful.
Mm-hmm.
And through the film, she's basically haunted in a number of ways. And if you've watched the trailers, you sort of know that we eventually find out that her husband wasn't necessarily the man that she believed he was, that he had a dark side she was unaware of. And I will say that I think the resolution of all of that, of everything that's happening to her and everything she finds out about her husband, is a little bit unsatisfying. I think that there is the finale is one that viewers of a certain subset of people will connect with extremely closely, extremely, like they're going to connect with it really hard. Mm-hmm. But for me, it didn't really land. However, the whole first and second act, and most of the third act until you really get down to the actual resolution as to what's happening, is excellent. Like, it really is just let down by the ending a little bit.
Right.
But if you like creepy movies, holy shit, do I have a movie for you. This movie is probably one of the more effective films I've seen this year in terms of building dread and in building tension and anxiety within the audience. To give you an idea, there's a number of jump scares, most of which are completely earned and not just cheap cop-outs, right? That's always the problem with the jump scares. They throw one in because they don't know what else to do or because it's easy. The jump scares in this are all very deliberate. and effective enough that my wife, who is a horror aficionado, like of the two of us, just to be clear, I'm the wuss when it comes to horror movies. She's the one who's just, you know, be in a theater. She'll be sitting there casually, like twirling her hair, whereas I'll have like my hoodie on and my hoodie, like hood, like closed and have my ears plugged and all of the stuff. But at least one of the jump scares made her jump out of her seat.
Can you describe it? Can we spoil that scare? Because I'm not going to watch this movie. I hate jump scares.
I don't, for anyone who might actually watch this film, I don't want to spoil any of it. Because okay, like the beauty of a film with jump scares that are good is that not seeing them coming is kind of the point.
Right.
Not the point, but like it's what makes them work. So I'd hate to give any of them away.
Mm-hmm.
But suffice to say that some of the scares and then some of the on top of that, some of the scares are really good. But on top of that, some of the imagery, especially toward the end, and even maybe during the end, which again, I don't think 100% works. But a lot of the imagery is really unique and interesting. And the way that we resolve what is happening, the way that she comes to realize that perhaps there is something actually going on, is super interesting and visually very, very arresting and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a shame that the ending doesn't really work, because I think this movie would be a real banger if it did.
So you mentioned the resolution a number of times. What's the problem, like, without giving spoilers, how does it not stick the landing?
What's the problem? It's difficult to say without spoilers, but I guess the way to say it would be that the film spends so much time trying to cast doubt on what's going on that by the time it sort of flips the script and says, nope, something's actually happening, it doesn't feel like there's enough there for it.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's spending so much time, the way it's building doubt and casting doubt on what's happening is by showing Rebecca Hall's character
mm-hmm.
being drunk and in a sort of a malleable state of mind. So because it spends so much time on that, it doesn't really spend enough time putting things in the background that might, on a second viewing, it'd be like, right, this was here the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, it just sort of at the end, I mean, if there's not that stuff, but at the end when the things that need to show up, it's kind of like, well, where were these the whole movie? Right, it spends so much time trying to convince you that maybe she's just seeing things or mm-hmm. feeling things that, even though I never didn't believe that she was actually seeing them, by the time it comes around to being like to asserting that they're actually happening, it just doesn't feel like there's been enough evidence of them happening.
Right.
It's a really weird and fine line that it's sort of zigzagging across.
Mm-hmm.
Like it should work, to be totally honest.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's hard to exactly, without speaking in really detailed spoilers, I think why it doesn't work, but it should. Like it only narrowly misses the mark, I would say.
The way you're describing it really reminds me of how I felt about the most recent Invisible Man, which I loved up until it tried to find a resolution. And another movie where it really wants you to kind of question what's going on. And I was fully expecting the end to kind of address this kind of duplicity you feel during the movie, where you think you see what you see, but are you really seeing what is going on? Is it the truth of what's happening? And the way that film is tied up in a neat little bow kind of disappointed me too. And the way you're describing the end of Nighthouse, it kind of feels like the same thing.
I would argue that the bow is not as neat.
Okay.
But that's deliberate too. I think that's a choice. Like it's very much meant to be a little bit more ambiguous than the mm-hmm. ending of The Invisible Man. It's just also, I just don't think there's enough there. There's not enough explanation as to what the thing that's happening actually is. And there's not enough background evidence to really make it feel like it's been there. Like it doesn't feel like it's been there the whole time, I guess is the problem.
Yeah.
And the explanation as to what it is really comes, like, if you were to break this film up into, say, five acts, which you probably could,
mm-hmm.
You know, my brain works much better in three-act thinking, but if you were to break it up into five, like the explanations really wouldn't come until the fifth act, which is kind of a problem. You know what I mean? Like there needs to be some indication of what's going to be revealed specifically earlier in the film. You know, so yeah, it's disappointing because it's like, honestly, otherwise, again, it's a really good movie and Rebecca Hall is a really good actress. And there's a nice little supporting turn from Vondi Curtis Hall as well, who I haven't seen recently. It's just nice whenever he pops up. He's one of those guys who you show up and you're like, oh, it's that guy. He's great. You know? And he just plays the like kindly neighbor who, you know, is looking in on the grief-stricken widow. And he's really good. And it's a shame that it doesn't quite stick the landing, for me at least. Yeah. I will say that again, though, like, and it's a really specific subset of people, but for that subset of people, I think there's going to be like the end of this movie is going to, those people are going to connect with it very closely, like very strongly. But I can't say what that subset is without spoiling everything. Right. So, but like, honestly though, like it's still definitely a movie we're seeing. I think that if where you are is safe to see a movie in a theater, this one is definitely worth seeing in a theater. Scary movies are scarier in a theater. And as such, this is a good one to see in a theater. unless, of course, you're in a place where either you're not comfortable or it's not safe. In which case, again, this will certainly be on demand by the end of the year. And you don't need to feel any guilt about not having seen it. You know, Disney doesn't need your money. So, you know, you're welcome to see it when you're safe to see it.
And you have the benefit of hiding behind multiple objects when you watch it in the comfort of your own home as well. So that's good.
Yeah. And actually, you know, not to put too much information out there, but so I had a huge drink ahead of the movie and a huge drink during the movie. And I really had to pee for like the last third. And that also lent a sense of urgency to the whole proceedings.
Oh my God. It's me and Alien Resurrection all over again. The last 25 minutes, the true horror on the last 25 minutes of that movie was me playing a gambling game with my bladder. And God damn it, that was close.
Yeah. And maybe I'm just feeling nostalgic for the cinematic experience, but like it's the first time that's happened to me in a while and it really lent something to the experience.
Okay. So what is like 3 stars? Where are we? Where's your letterbox falling into this?
Yeah. It's a pretty perfect 3 out of 5. It's really good. It just doesn't stick the landing. So, well, like I said, if it did stick the landing, it would be, you know, it'd be a banger. It'd be in the running for one of the better movies of the year. But it doesn't stick the landing, so it's fine.
Do you know what the problem I have with many films like this now? And I've seen the trailer, and stylistically, it reminds me of it. But we talked about things being hinted that when you watch again, you seal the things, and a good resolution and a build of dread and. It Follows exists and Babadook exists. And when you've got such perfect examples of everything you're talking about, like perfect screw turners with amazing resolutions that when you finish it and you go and you have that knowledge makes the second watch even better. These are pretty high standards to live up to. Particularly It Follows, I think, is so perfect at that. And the trailers reminded me of that kind of tone, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to make a comparison to It Follows, then I would say that, you know, in all the ways you just mentioned, It Follows is probably constructed better. This movie's much scarier. Like, much, much scarier.
I really want to know the jump scare now.
The funny,
you don't have to tell us.
I'm not going to, maybe I'll tell you after, but the funny thing is that you know what? I'm not going to say anything now, but it's just interesting. You want to hear it so bad because when I explain it, it's not going to sound like anything. Okay. but it's really effective.
Yeah, good. So before we wrap up, should we talk about a game I'm playing? I'd like to talk about a game, but it's actually a very filmic game. It's basically a movie where you're the director.
Yes, you're playing a game called 12 Minutes, I think it's called.
Yes, 12 Minutes. So recently released by Annapurna Interactive, who are an amazing company that have made films for a long time, but they kind of recently, well, relatively recently got into the game making side as well. and have released so many incredible games that they have a real eye for strong narrative and different ways those narratives are told. There's a movie called What Remains of Edith Finch, which I don't know if you've played, Matt, but is just the most incredible story of just going through a house and triggering memories. And each of these memories is a different style of gameplay, and it's an amazing story. And I'm playing 12 minutes, which feels like a Hitchcock movie, a lost Hitchcock movie that is shot purely from above. So you only ever see these actors like heads and feet as they walk around their tiny little American apartment. And there's two of them. So there's a man voiced by James McAvoy and a woman voiced by Daisy Ridley, both sporting American accents with varying degrees of success. But basically the guy you play is the man, and he is stuck in a 12-minute loop. And in those 12 minutes, he comes home and has a chat with his wife about various things. And then the door is kicked in by a man claiming to be a cop, but he's not. He's very clearly not. He's a bad man there to do bad things. And he kills you. And this happens very, very early on. He will kill you. And every time you die or get punched or get beaten, you wake up instantly having just walked into the apartment at the beginning of the loop. But you keep all your memories. And so this is one of these amazing Chinese puzzle box style games where almost like a roguelite, that each time you die, you gain a bit of knowledge and you start piecing these bits of knowledge together. When you speak to your wife or to the cop, you have a number of dialogue options. And the more you learn about the world in the last loop, the more dialogue options you have in the next loop. So you can really, it gives you the opportunity to start adding these layers and layers. And what's really interesting is the desperation that sort of slips in, because you're getting murdered and beaten over and over and over. And mysteries start being revealed and things that you did not know become more and more important. And so each time you don't have the full 12 minutes, because the 12 minutes will reset, but the cop turns up after about 6 or 7. So you've got this very definite window, and the desperation that sinks in is pretty incredible. Because when you watch this kind of movie where people are in desperate situations and they do terrible things, you kind of have the tendency, or I do anyway, of thinking, oh, okay, this is for the narrative. No one would be this inhumane. No one would act this way. And it turns out desperation does things. And when you are given the option of acting, it doesn't force you down any route at all. The 12 minutes really encapsulates that very dark kind of underbelly of decision-making. And it's very Rear Window. So you're trapped in this, really it's one space. It's an apartment with one main room, a bathroom and a bedroom. But there's lots of small details that you start noticing on each playthrough. You start building together your little toolbox of, this is over here, this is over here. And what if I do this and this? And there's a lot of what if in this game. And I've played it for about 5 hours, and I've definitely got to the kind of loops where I just don't know what to do. So I'll just sit on the couch and wait for the time to pass, wait for the cop to burst in and murder me. And it reminds me of the time loop movies like Groundhog Day and like Edge of Tomorrow and Palm Springs, where there's a moment where they kind of just give up and let the time pass and let the loop happen again. And you can play it like that. You can play it casually or with like this frantic energy trying to solve everything, or trying different combinations of items and hiding places and actions. And it really feels like a lost Hitchcockian noir. And I love Hitchcock and I love film noir. And this is ticking all of my boxes at the moment. I don't know if I'm anywhere near to like actually identifying what I need to do to finish this loop, but the route it's taken me down so far is pretty incredible.
So is it, and I haven't played it at all, so just to ask a few basic questions, is it like one of those, like an escape room type thing where like you need to find the specific thing, or is it the specific actions or the specific combination of those things that you need to get out of the loop, do you think? Or is there something more to it?
So I don't think it's it's not a huge spoiler, but there is a MacGuffin. There is a watch. There is a pocket watch. And the watch is important. And you learn this on the first loop. Like, it does a really good job of giving you the initial mystery. So the bad man wants this pocket watch. And it has something to do with the death of your girlfriend's father. And so the threads start unspooling as you pick at them. And the location of this watch becomes one of the most important things to find out. But of course, then it's also one of the most difficult things to find out. I don't know the location of the watch yet, but the structure is a bit like, it is like an escape room or combined with one of these very old puzzle boxes where you have to push pieces in order to unlock it. Like, I'm fairly sure there's a single successful route through the game, but what I really like is that there's no shepherding at all. The game doesn't kind of suggest maybe you should do this, like try and do this instead. I'm fairly sure 90% of the things you can do go down a rabbit hole that have no successful conclusion. And it's just kind of working out, okay, well, he's going to do this and she's going to do that. If I do this to her first, then he does this differently, which will give me the chance to do that. So you start building these conditional clauses in your head, like four or five layers deep, until you get to the point where if you are trying to trigger a certain thing, set the first domino in place, as soon as the loop begins, your wife is trying to have a nice chat with you. And instead of reacting nicely, if you skip through the dialogue options to start collecting the items you need, the dialogue responds accordingly. So your wife is like, hey, darling. And you're like, not now. And I'm pushing her aside if you skip through. So you do have this feeling of it reacting. It's very reactive to what you're doing, which makes it all the more real as well. And you do see the guy's decisions become like a reflection of your own desperation to get through this thing, because the only part it won't let you skip is when the cop kills you. It's a 20-second sequence and there is no skipping it. And I think that's solidly intentional, because it's not pretty. It's quite graphic. It doesn't pull away. It doesn't fade away. And it's something you would like to avoid in the future. So, and it's a point and click as well. So there's no direct control. So you're already... You're moving a cursor around to walk somewhere, interact with something, or then drag up to the top to use your props in some way. So the controls are very straightforward. I think that really benefits the game overall. But it's really incredible. I think you would love it, actually. I think you'd really love it.
Yeah, I think it's only available on platforms that I don't have, fortunately. But I think it's like Windows and Xbox. Is that right?
Yeah, I went straight on Game Pass, which means I got it for precisely $0, all the subscription dollars. But it's if it does come out on something you own, I would definitely pick it up quickly.
Well, I mean, I will probably eventually have a PS5, and I'm sure it will eventually no longer be exclusive. So one day.
It's worth mentioning the soundtrack is on Spotify, and I assume on Apple Music, and the soundtrack is incredibly good. It's just very noir-esque pianos and strings, and it's wonderful. Really good.
Oh, good. It's interesting because I feel like I have a number of friends who are like, oh, did you play this new game yet? And for me personally, I'm always like, yeah, I just started Horizon Zero Dawn. You know, 3 years after everybody else. So just to give our listeners an idea how much of a gamer I am at this point, I play Pokemon Go every day, and I just started Horizon Zero Dawn. So, and you know what? That doesn't make me anything other than a true gamer. So suck it, nerds.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've just started Horizon. I've put 50 hours into Horizon Zero Dawn, and I would gladly wipe my mind and restart from zero. I love that game. I'm quite jealous.
Well, speaking of games that are infinitely replayable, it's a good thing that there's another new version of Skyrim coming.
Well, I mean, your fridge might not have a version yet, so it's always good to have that.
True, it's true.
But this one has fishing, and I feel like the other ones are bullshit, but this one, I know people who play games specifically to go fishing in them. And so I'm quite excited for them to discover that in Skyrim, you and your elf buddies can go and sit around a lake and pull fish out all day.
I mean, honestly, that sounds delightful.
It really does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, so that, I think we're coming to a natural sort of wind down point. So to summarize, Free Guy is very good, and you should definitely see it whenever it is safe for you to do so. The Nighthouse is also quite good, and you should probably see it whenever it is safe for you to do so, assuming you're good with scary movies, because it is a very scary movie. And 12 minutes sounds like a delightful play, as long as you have an Xbox or a Windows machine to play it on.
Yeah.
Good. What,
what's happening in the next week?
What I was going to say, well, I think next week we're going to probably have some stuff to watch. But we'll probably, for next week's podcast, I'm assuming, going to do a wrap-up of the Fantasia Film Festival.
Yes.
For those of you,
also, go ahead.
So for those of you listening in Canada, Fantasia Festival has been happening out of Montreal virtually since the 5th and runs until the 25th. So today being the 22nd, you have 3 days to watch films. And there's a lot of good ones on demand, and they're all available to all Canadians right now. So without getting into too many spoilers, you should definitely seek out, which I think Simon was about to say, Alien on Stage. Yeah. You should definitely seek out a Japanese film called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. But honestly, Fantasia is a great festival, and it's available, again, online for all Canadians. And there's a ton of really good and interesting genre stuff in there, and you should definitely go at least check out the listing, because you'd be doing yourself a disservice as a film fan if you don't.
Yep.
You've probably seen, if you're reading the website, a number of reviews and other coverage from myself, with some more coming from Simon this week. And we're next week will be our wrap up episode for the festival. We don't know exactly what that's going to look or sound like just yet. But that's what we're going to be talking about, is festival stuff. And maybe something else. Who knows? We sort of win this. We're very professional, and we plan this out minutes in advance. So,
and that works for us.
Yeah. Good. In the meantime, of course, if you need to follow along, if you'd like to follow along, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and Tumblr, of all things. Our usernames are either Awesome Friday or Awesome Friday CA, depending on the platform. If you've liked what you've heard, we'd like to invite you now to do the same things that every podcast in the world asks you for. Please subscribe on your platform of choice. Please share us to your friends on your platform of choice. Please give us a like and a review on your platform of choice. And if you really like what you've heard and you'd like to support us a little bit more directly, you can find us also on Patreon at patreon.com/mcsimpson and become one of our sponsors. We don't have that much in the way of exclusive content just yet, but I will be posting another patron exclusive podcast episode sometime this week with an interview with I haven't decided which one I'm going to post. There's been several now, so we'll get full audio of that. But later on, once we sort of get the ball rolling, we'll also be offering some polls on things you'd like to hear us talk about, and some other exclusive stuff like that. So
yay.
You can find all of those links if you just go to awesomefriday.ca. They are all in the sidebar and at the bottom of most posts. And if you'd like to help us out and help us keep the lights on around here, we would love to have you.
We really would. So thank you so much for listening. And we really hope you join us next week for a Fantasia roundup, where we're going to probably talk about as many of the Fantasia films as possible. But that would be a good one.
We'll do rapid fire, maybe. That'd be good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, until then, have yourselves a lovely week, and we will see you on Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.